I mean, it's to keep people out and stop theft of equipment and materials.
Yeah, but they had it there from day one, before they had any materials on site. And you can't really steal a 10-ton piece of equipment and drive it off down the street. He paused. And they tarped everything.
What do you mean?
They covered everything up.
You mean so no one could see in?
Right. I thought that was strange.
At that moment, apparently Mary Lancaster snatched the phone from her husband.
Why all this interest in the American Grill?
Just a theory.
What's your theory?
I'm still forming it, but I think we made a mistake.
What mistake?
By commencing our investigation at the point of the murders.
Where else should we have started it?
Why did David Katz choose to come to Burlington, Ohio? Or did someone else make that decision for him?
Chapter 63. Fred Palmer was in his 70s, overweight and bald, with a cheerful face and ruddy complexion. His office had one window, one desk with a chair, and two chairs fronting the desk. There were no pictures on the wall, no carpet underfoot. He was leisurely turning the pages of a file on his desk while Decker and Lancaster sat impatiently across from him.
"Been in business nearly 45 years," he said.
"Right, you told us that. Have you found what you're looking for?"
asked Lancaster.
"Okay, here it is. Thought so. The American Grill. Don't eat there myself. I've got acid reflux. Everything they serve gives me reflux."
"And the construction? My husband said you worked on it."
"Earl, now there's a nice guy. Nice guy. You're lucky, ma'am, to have him."
"Yes, very. The file? You said you had it?"
Palmer planted a thick thumb down in the middle of the page. "Heavy equipment rental."
"Rental?" said Decker. "Did you not do the work?"
"No, that's what rental means." Palmer laughed and gave Lancaster a funny look. "Can tell he doesn't know shit about construction."
"What sort of equipment?" asked Decker.
"Excavator, dump truck, front loader, bulldozer. It's all there."
He tapped the file.
"How long did they rent it?"
Palmer looked over the page.
"Says here 2 weeks."
"Did you normally rent out equipment like that, or did you also typically do the work?"
Palmer sat back and closed the file.
"We like to do the work, of course, but that was an odd project."
"Why do you say that?" asked Decker.
"This Katz guy. Darren?"
"David," corrected Decker.
"Right, David Katz. He later got murdered, you know."
"Do tell,"
said Lancaster, nearly rolling her eyes.
"Oh yeah, killed, him and some others. Anyways, he came into town and got this loan and wanted to build this restaurant. Okay, fine, lots of people here could have done that for him."
"But he got a company from outside the area to do it," said Decker. "We know that."
"And he tarped things off and had really tight security around the construction area,"
added Lancaster.
"That was odd. I tried to get the work, but we got turned down. We were the biggest outfit back then. Still one of the biggest today. Surprised me, but it was his money."
"Was that the only thing odd about it that you found?"
asked Lancaster.
"Well, no." He tapped the file. "That was."
Lancaster looked confused.
"You've lost me."
"What I mean is, what do you need all that heavy equipment for, if you're just digging a foundation for a restaurant? I mean, how much excavation is there to do? Most projects like that, there's none. You just grade the property, lay your foundation, and build up from there. Hell, what they rented from me, they could have dug down to China nearly." He laughed. "China, you get it?"
"And did you ever ask them why they'd rented so much equipment like that?" asked Decker.
Palmer gaped at him.
"What, are you serious? Of course not. It was more money to me. None of my business what he does, so long as he pays. And he did. I will tell you that the construction took longer than it should have, and they had to pay some additional fees to me because of it. I remember driving by some days and wondering when the hell they were going to finish up."
"Why do you think it took extra time?"
asked Lancaster.
"Not sure, but it did. That's all I know."
He laughed.
I do remember one thing.
What?
When we got the equipment back, they washed it all, clean as a whistle. Now, I can never remember that happening before. Most times it comes back all crapped up and we have to clean it up. But not that time. I could have eaten my lunch off the stuff. He laughed heartily. Eaten my lunch. Get it?
Yeah, said Decker. I get it.
After leaving Palmer's office, Lancaster looked up at Decker.
So, what did we just learn?
That David Katz undertook, apparently, the strangest construction project in the history of Burlington.
And what does that tell us?
That it's time for us to find out who the hell David Katz really was. They were walking down the street when a car drove past and then stopped. The window came down.
Amos Decker?
Decker glanced over at the expensive car. Duncan Marks was sitting in the driver's seat.
Mr. Marks, how are you?
Well, I'm fine, but you look great. A lot different from the last time I saw you.
Yeah, things have looked up for me.
Heard you were back in town.
Yeah, for a bit.
Never forgot what you did for my daughter.
Hope she's doing okay.
She is, actually. I think Jenny finally figured it out.
Good to know.
God, I heard what happened to Rachel Katz. That was awful. Is she going to be okay?
We hope so,
said Lancaster.
We've done some projects together. She's quite a business person. Very smart.
Decker slowly nodded.
Would it be okay if we asked you a few questions about Katz? We're trying to dig into who attempted to murder her, and you might be helpful.
Sure, absolutely. Hey, come to dinner tonight at my house. He looked at Lancaster. Bring your friend here, too.
Oh, you don't have to do that, said Decker.
No, I insist. Least I could do after your help with Jenny. Say around 7?
Decker nodded and Marks drove off. Lancaster looked over at him.
Might be an interesting dinner.
Let's hope it's something more than interesting.
Chapter 64. Decker and Mars looked down at the woman. She was so covered in tubes and monitoring lines that it was almost difficult to discern the living person under this medical canopy. But it was Rachel Katz, still alive, and still critically stable.
What do the doctors say? Asked Decker.
That she'll wake up at some point. They just don't know when.
You've been in here most of the time. Has she come to at all? Made any sounds? Talked in her sleep?
No, nothing like that.
You need to take a break from here, Melvin. She's got great care, and she's well protected.
I don't know, Decker, he said doubtfully.
I do know, and I've got someplace I want you to go with me tonight.
Where?
Duncan Marks's house. He invited me and Lancaster to dinner. I don't think he'll mind you tagging along. He was asking about Rachel today.
Okay, but why are you having dinner with the guy?
Because he did some business with her, and I need to know more about the history there.
Okay, if you think it will help.
At this point, Melvin, anything will help.
They drove in Decker's car up the long, winding road to Marx's home, or more aptly, his estate. They pulled in front of the mansion and parked in a stone-paved motor court. Decker looked in the direction of Burlington and saw the lights of the town winking down below. Marx certainly had a fine view from up here. When they got out, Lancaster tugged self-consciously at her dress and then prodded a few stray hairs back into place.
I didn't really have anything in my closet for something like this,
she said, staring up at the enormous stone and stucco house, which looked like it belonged in the French or Italian countryside.
And I had no time to get my hair done.
Decker said, you look fine.
It's different for guys, Decker,
she said in an annoyed tone.
Just so long as you have your gun, he said.
I hope you're joking,
she said, grinning. He didn't smile back. Decker wore a corduroy jacket that looked like it had been new about 30 years ago, and khaki pants, and the cleanest shirt he had left. Mars looked resplendent in a tailored wool jacket, white button-down shirt, slacks, and a pocket square.
You, on the other hand, look like you could be in GQ,
Lancaster said to Mars. Thanks. For 20 years I wore the same clothes, white prison jumpsuit, so this is a nice change. They walked up to the massive double front doors, and Decker rang the bell. A few moments later it was opened by a man in butler's livery, who escorted them through to the library, where he said Marks and the rest of his party had gathered for cocktails before dinner. It was a long wood-paneled room, with few books but a roaring fire in the fireplace, and clusters of seating areas full of plush furniture that looked custom-made, and probably was. Marks was standing near the fire with a drink in hand, with two other men and three women clustered around him. Decker recognized his daughter, Jenny. She was in her 20s, tall and blonde, and vapid, at least in his estimation. She'd already done more falling in love than most people did in a lifetime. Her only problem had been that all these men had loved her father's money far more than they'd loved her. She looked at Decker with unfriendly eyes, he thought. She was probably pissed that he knew more about her and her failed relationships than she wanted him to. Jenny was the product of Duncan Marks's second marriage to a younger woman who had called it quits and left after Jenny was only 3 years old. To his credit, Marks had raised her, but he'd given her more than he should have, was Decker's opinion. And with that, he had taken away any ambition she might have had. Decker, called out Marks, waving them over.
This is my friend, Melvin Mars, said Decker. I think you've met. I didn't think you'd mind if he came too.
Right, right. You were with Rachel.
Marks shook his head sadly.
That was so tragic. I hope she's going to be okay.
She's hanging tough, replied Mars. I've been with her at the hospital, and things are looking up.
Good, good.
He waved to the others in his group.
Decker, I think you know Jenny, my daughter.
Jenny Marks gave Decker a small nod.
And these are some of my business associates.
Decker ran his eye over the small group of men and women. They all looked intense, well-heeled, and unimpressed by him and his appearance. The women were elegantly slender and dressed expensively with earring-draped ears and necklace-draped necks, and they looked condescendingly at the plain Lancaster. One of them leaned into her friend and said something to make the other woman smile. Decker saw Lancaster clutch her jacket more closely around her. They were served drinks and gathered closer by the fire. They could hear the wind whistling down the chimney.
God, Ohio winters, here we go again, Marks laughed. Gets right into my bones.
Dad, you spend winters either in Palm Beach or Palm Springs,
his daughter pointed out.
Well, I spent enough of them here in the past, he retorted with a smile. You ever been to Palm Beach, Decker? He asked.
No, I never have.
It's beautiful there.
If you have a lot of money,
said Jenny.
Her father said, No, it's beautiful even without money. The scenery and weather are free, but the money makes it a lot more fun, I'll grant you that.
Marks turned back to Decker.
Now, do you have any leads on what happened to Rachel? I mean, what sick bastard would have done something like this?
We have the sick bastard who did it, Decker pointed to Lancaster. Thanks to my partner here, who shot him dead before he could kill me, at great personal risk to herself.
Now the other women looked at Lancaster quite differently. The one who had made the joke, probably at Lancaster's expense, paled and took a step back, staring at the detective with far more respect.
Now that's impressive, said Marks. The only killing I've ever made is in the real estate business, he added, without a trace of humor.
He raised his glass to her.
Thank you for your bravery, Detective Lancaster.
The others followed suit. She smiled, blushed, and took a quick sip of her gin and tonic. Decker continued.
We believe it was a murder for hire.
Mark snapped.
A murder for hire? Who in the hell would want Rachel dead?
I don't know.
He looked around at the group.
You did business with her. Did she have any enemies?
He looked at each of them as they slowly shook their heads.
I'm really the one who had the business relationship with her, Decker, said Marks. Although we don't do much together anymore, she has her financial backers and really doesn't need someone like me. I can't say that I knew everything about the woman, but it never occurred to me that she had enemies. I mean, I know what happened to her husband, but that was a long time ago. And he was just in the wrong place at the wrong time, if I remember correctly.
The butler came in and announced dinner. Marks grinned at Decker as they filed into the dining room.
I know, it's quite British, the butler thing, I guess. And silly, but what the hell? I like it.
In the long dining room, Marks placed Decker next to him, while he put Mars in between the other two women, and Lancaster between the other two men. Jenny Marks sat across from Decker, while her father took his place at the head of the table. As they were eating, Decker asked,
"So what did you know about David Katz?"
"David?" Marks rubbed his mouth with his napkin. "Well, he came to town years ago, young and smart and ambitious as hell."
"I understand he had already made money doing something."
"That's right. I heard that too."
Marks chewed on a bit of steak.
"Do you know exactly what he made his money in?" asked Decker.
"Not really. I thought it was the stock market or the bond market, but I can't tell you definitely."
Meanwhile, the women next to Mars were asking him about himself.
"You look like an athlete,"
said the brunette on his left.
"Were you in the pros?"
"Played some college ball. Wanted to play in the NFL, but never made it."
"You look like you could still play right now."
"Don't know about that. Those boys are a lot bigger and faster than when I played."
The woman on his right, indicating Decker, said,
"How do you know that guy?"
"Dude saved my life once."
"Isn't he a detective or something?"
said the woman.
"One of the best."
"He doesn't look like a detective."
"What are they supposed to look like?"
"I don't know. Like on TV, I guess."
"I'd take Decker over all those guys."
The man on Lancaster's left nibbled at his bread while watching her out of the corner of his eye. She sensed this and turned to him.
"You've been working with Mr. Marks for a long time?"
"Does it matter?" asked the man.
He changed expressions when the guy on the other side of Lancaster made a face.
"I mean, yeah, about 15 years now. He's a good boss."
"What do you do for him?"
"Basically whatever he wants me to do for him."
The man gave what he probably thought was a disarming smile. Lancaster didn't return it. She focused on her meal and asked the attendant for a top-off on her wine.
"Why all the interest in David Katz?" Marks asked Decker.
"You ever been to the American Grill?"
Marks laughed.
"Not my sort of place. I can't eat burgers and fries anymore, and I'm more into wine than beer."
Jenny was sitting across from Decker.
"You said you think someone hired a person to kill Rachel?"
Decker nodded and focused on her as her father sat up straighter in his chair.
"That's right."
"But why would anyone do that? Rachel has never hurt anyone."
"You know her well?"
"I would consider us friends. She's actually taught me a lot about handling myself. I've started to work with Dad, and she's been in the business world for a long time. I consider her a mentor."
"Then you've been doing a good job, too," said Marks proudly.
Decker's surprise must have shown on his face because Jenny smiled sardonically and said,
"I've grown a little since you last knew me, Detective Decker. Even earned my MBA.
"Glad to hear it, Miss Marks."
"Oh, just make it, Jenny. You saved me from that low-life jerk over 2 years ago. You deserve a first-name relationship."
"Okay, Jenny. When was the last time you talked to Katz?"
"Oh, probably about a week or so ago. We had lunch, just a catch-up sort of thing."
"She seem okay?"
"Yes, nothing out of the ordinary."
Marks said, "What do you think is going on, Decker?"
"I'm not sure. Someone wanted her dead, and her husband was murdered, too."
"But that was a long time ago, and they caught the guy who did it."
"No, we didn't. A man was convicted, but he didn't kill David Katz and the others. He ended up coming back to town and being murdered, too."
Marks said,
"Wait a minute, that's right. I remember hearing about that. What was his name again?"
"Merrill Hawkins."
"That's right, it was all over the news. Those murders all those years ago cast a long shadow on this town, I can tell you that. And now you say he's innocent?"
Decker noticed that Jenny Marks had flinched at her father's remark.
"What is it?"
he asked her.
"Just something that Rachel said."
When?
The last time I talked to her, we were discussing business, and that's when she said it.
What?
It was really weird.
She paused to recall it.
Something about sins and long shadows?
Old sins cast long shadows?
Said Lancaster, who had been raptly listening to this exchange. Jenny pointed at her.
Yes, exactly. Old sins cast long shadows.
Lancaster said,
Sounds like something out of a British detective novel.
Decker caught Mars's eye. He said, Shades of truth.
What? Asked Marks.
Just something else that Rachel told someone. Do you know anything else about David Katz's background?
Well, I had him checked out when we were talking about doing some deals together. They never came to fruition because he was killed. Everything seemed to check out okay.
How far back did your check go?
I'm not sure. George?
He looked at the man on the right of Lancaster. He was small and slightly built, with thinning dark hair and a bony face. George said,
We usually do a financial dig on the person, go back about 5 years. I didn't do the one on this Mr. Katz, but that's generally the drill. 5 years, said Decker, really to himself.
You think that's far enough? Asked Marks.
Apparently not, replied Decker.
Chapter 65. It was 7 a.m., and Decker sat on his bed at the Residence Inn once more, going over the construction plans for the American Grill. He had sent off texts to Jameson asking her for help on a variety of questions. He hadn't gotten responses yet on those, or the research he had asked her to do about the shell companies backing Rachel Katz's projects. He didn't know if he ever would. He was slowly turning the pages of the construction drawings when he stopped and peered more closely at a particular page. Then he flipped back a few pages and studied the information there. Next, he grabbed another handful of documents and went down the list of line items. Finally, he picked up his phone and made a call. Lancaster answered.
I'm just about to step into the shower, Decker. Can I call you back? And I had too much to drink last night. My head is splitting.
It's actually Earl I want to talk to.
Hang on.
A few moments later, Earl's voice came on the line.
What's up, Amos?
Got another construction question for you.
Okay, shoot.
I'm looking at the construction plans for the American Grill and invoices for construction materials.
All right.
You know the size of the place, right?
Generally, it's a typical footprint for a retail restaurant operation.
Talk some more about that.
Well, I mean a four exterior wall, one-story basic rectangle, cinder block construction with brick veneer, and a flat tarred and pebble-topped roof where the outside HVAC units are housed.
What sort of square footage are we talking?
For a sit-down restaurant as opposed to a fast food place, about 60% of the space goes to the dining and bar area, and about 40% to the kitchen, prep areas, and storage. The grill, I would estimate, is about 5,000 square feet, so about 3,000 of that would be the dining and the bar, and the rest for kitchen prep and storage. Then you have your enclosed dumpster area out back. The interior layout allows about 15 square feet of space per patron seat. That's the general rule of thumb in the industry. That way the grill could comfortably accommodate a couple hundred diners at a time, which I think is around its fire code limit of customers at any one time.
Okay, how much concrete are we talking about for a place that size?
You'd pour your footers, that's not all that much. Then you'd lay your block walls.
He gave Decker an estimate of the concrete and the blocks required. Decker looked at the line item on the page he was looking at.
The cinder block count is pretty much spot on. But what if I told you the concrete outlay was way over quadruple what you just said?
That's impossible.
Tell me a way that it wouldn't be impossible.
Earl was silent for a few moments.
Well, the only way to justify that much concrete is if they built a full basement. So their pour obviously would be a lot more. But why would a restaurant want a full basement instead of just footers and foundation you build on? You couldn't possibly need that much storage.
Good question, said Decker. Hope I find the answer. He thanked Earl, told him to have his wife call back when she was done, clicked off, and looked down at the plans. The American grill was turning out to be far more special than he had previously thought. A full basement for what? And maybe whatever that was would explain why David Katz had built it, and why Rachel Katz had kept it all these years. He went on his laptop and loaded in the name William Payton, and added the qualifier, the American Grill. Nothing remotely relevant came up in connection with the longtime manager of the restaurant. He took out his phone and pulled up the photos he'd taken of the trainees, including the one named Daniel, the trainees who never stayed very long. Then his memories shifted to the guy who'd been staring at him from the kitchen. There clearly had been suspicion in that look. He glanced back at the construction plans and then focused on Earl Lancaster's words.
The only way to justify that much concrete is if they built a full basement.
But as he'd also pointed out, why would David Katz have gone to the additional time, trouble, and expense for more storage area than he could possibly ever need? And if there was an underground room, it would have to be accessible somehow. There would have to be a door down there, and steps. And what would be down there? Mary Lancaster called him back 20 minutes later.
Long shower, he grumbled.
I had to dress and dry my hair, too, and do it all with a friggin' hangover,
she snapped.
Earl told me about your questions. Where are you headed with this?
I think there's another room under the American Grill.
Why would that be?
I have no idea. But Earl couldn't think of another reason why so much concrete would have been used. And maybe that's why Rachel Katz hid the documents I found. That's where the additional concrete was listed.
Meaning she knew about a possible underground room?
Katz told me that she and her husband met on a blind date, and 6 months later they were married. This was after the American Grill opened.
So maybe she didn't know about the underground room then.
At least not at that point. And that might explain why they used tarps over the construction site and used outside contractors and rented equipment. They didn't want anyone to know what they were doing.
And Fred Palmer told us that the equipment they rented was a lot more horsepower than was needed. But they might need all of that if they were going to remove enough dirt to make way for a full basement.
Right. Although I guess somewhere in the permitting process, they'd have to tell the folks in government about their plans and get approvals. Code compliance and inspections and all that. But I guess there's also no law against having a basement underneath your restaurant.
But you would have to have a way to access it,
said Lancaster.
A waitress at the restaurant told me some interesting things.
He quickly told her about the trainees and waitstaff, the longtime manager, and the seemingly one-year turnover for all except the kitchen staff.
Okay, this is just getting weirder and weirder,
noted Lancaster.
What is going on in this alleged room underneath the restaurant? Do you think it might be a drug operation?
If so, it's certainly an odd one.
And that would mean that instead of an innocent citizen who was murdered for being in the wrong place at the wrong time, Katz was dirty. Maybe that's what led to his getting killed.
That could certainly be the case if somebody wanted him out of the way.
But why kill the Richards family, too?
Don Richards gave him the loan for the grill. Maybe that ties in somehow. He paused. I wonder about something.
What?
I'm wondering if the loan was ever paid off, said Decker.
Chapter 66.
Okay, I've got bad news and bad news. Which do you want first?
Decker was talking to Alex Jameson on his cell phone.
Well, I guess it doesn't matter, does it? He said.
Okay, we struck out on the shell companies you gave us. We can't penetrate them.
Okay.
And the tattoos on the two dead guys? I ran them through the relevant databases and came up with zip. I mean, most of the tats taken separately are well known, but the Bureau has never seen them all strung together like that before. It's quite a mix of hate groups. Nazi, Aryan, Klansmen.
Well, thanks for checking.
No, you don't understand, Decker. I've got people freaking out here. When the FBI can't find out something, that's news. And they're also afraid that maybe these different hate groups are starting to come together, sharing resources, coordinating terrorist actions, accomplishing more terrible things together than they can separately.
You mean the shell companies are unusually hardened, and the tats may reflect some new sort of terrorist threat?
Bingo. When I told Bogart, he was really concerned.
Well, I share that concern.
Anything from Rachel Katz yet?
She hasn't regained consciousness. The doctors are getting worried.
What else can you do?
I could find out what's in the basement of the American Grill.
Haven't you seen the movies? You never go down to the basement.
I did in Barrenville.
My point exactly.
Decker clicked off and went in search of Lancaster, finding her getting some coffee in the break room.
You want a cup?
She asked. He shook his head. We need to go to the bank.
Why? Do you need money?
No. Answers. On the drive over to Don Richards' old bank, Decker said, David Katz owned a late model Mercedes sedan when he was killed. It's the car I think his murderer drove over in. Katz and his wife were living in a very nice apartment in town. He owned the American Grill after building it with a construction and operating loan, and he might have had other loans.
So?
So how do you get a big loan like that without putting up collateral?
Maybe he put up collateral.
Meaning he had money of his own.
Well, yeah, he came to town with money, you know that. Duncan Marks mentioned it at dinner.
Yeah, everybody keeps telling me that, but no one can tell me where the money came from.
Well, maybe the bank can help.
Only reason we're going there. Otherwise, I wouldn't set foot in one.
You don't like banks?
Not since they foreclosed on my house here and repossessed my car. And with my shitty credit score, they don't like me either, replied Decker. Bart Tinsdale was the bank's vice president. He had been at the institution long enough to have known Don Richards. Tinsdale was tall and lanky, but his suit was ill-fitting, the pants and coat sleeves too short for his limbs. His shoes were old and battered, and his socks seemed to have lost their elasticity. However, he had an alert eye and firm handshake, and quickly guided them back to his small glass-enclosed office area off the main lobby, where they all sat around his desk. He pointed out the window.
Every time I look out that window and see the grill, I think about Don and David.
So you knew them both? Asked Decker.
Tinsdale nodded. I was just a bank clerk then.
Lancaster said,
Well, you worked your way up. VP now.
Tinsdale's face crinkled.
I'm a little fish in a little pond, and I'm perfectly happy about that. Good place to raise kids, and I've got five.
Wow, I've got one, and some days it's more than I can handle.
The banker nodded appreciatively.
My wife is a saint, and if the kids turn out well, it's more because of her than me. But I do the coaching bit, soccer and baseball, and I'm an assistant coach for basketball. I played in high school. Pretty full schedule.
I can see that.
He sat forward. But you didn't come about that. Decker said, No, we've reopened the investigation into David Katz's and Don Richards' murders, and we're also investigating the attempted murder of Rachel Katz. Tinsdale involuntarily shuddered.
Been way too many killings around here. He gazed at Decker. You were here when the shootings happened at the high school. My oldest daughter was a freshman when that happened. Thank God she was okay.
Yeah, thank God,
said Lancaster.
So what can I do for you? Asked Tinsdale.
For starters, we'd like to know more about the loan that Richards made to David Katz. Do you have those records?
Well, they'd be on the computer. Everything's on the computer, even the old stuff now.
He looked at his keyboard before glancing up.
Do you need to get a warrant for that?
Katz is dead. I don't see what harm there is in looking at old bank records.
I guess that's true.
Tinsdale tapped some keys and maneuvered through some screens.
Okay, what exactly do you want to know?
How much was the loan for? Asked Decker. Tinsdale read off the screen.
$2.5 million.
Lancaster gaped.
That's a pretty big loan, isn't it?
Well, I've done bigger, but it is fairly substantial for a restaurant in Burlington, I'll grant you that, particularly since it was so many years ago. But it was apparently an expensive build-out.
Have you been to the grill? Asked Decker.
I have, in fact, yes.
It seemed like a million other restaurants I've been in, not particularly high-end.
Tinsdale was nodding before he finished speaking. I have to admit that I thought the same thing, actually, but the loan was granted.
Did he have to put up any collateral for the loan?
Well, we put a mortgage on the property, of course, and the improvements. That's standard, and yes, I would imagine he had to put up some money of his own. We don't generally fully fund projects like this. We want the borrower to have some skin in the game, so to speak. He was applying for money for the construction, and also operating funds to get the business up and going. It's not like he could start paying down the loan from day one while they're still building the thing. The interest would be wrapped into the principal and payments calculated off that. Let me just check on a few items. He read down several more screens. Okay, yes, he did put up some money of his own. A little over $500,000. That went into the land purchase. And he also personally guaranteed the loan.
Is that typical?
Asked Lancaster. Tinsdale gave her a knowing look. Oh, yes, especially with a restaurant. Failure rates on those are really high. And if the customer defaults, the bank doesn't just want to have to look to the collateral. We're not in the business of running a restaurant, and the resale rates on a failed restaurant operation are not very good. Pennies on the dollar. People figure if a location failed, why would a second try succeed?
So if he personally guaranteed the loan, he must have had some wealth,
said Lancaster. Assuredly, yes. It would have done a complete financial due diligence on him, and he would have had to show proof of collateral funds, and we would have filed a security interest on those assets. Stocks or bonds or cash accounts or whatever the collateral was, given the bank a secured interest in those assets in case of default.
Could you tell us what his net worth was back then? Asked Decker.
Tinsdale hit some more keys. Let's see. Okay, we took an interest in some CDs that he had that were worth 80% of the loan amount. All told, it shows that his net worth back then was about $9 million.
Wow,
said Lancaster.
With all that money, why not just fund the construction out of his own pocket?
Tinsdale smiled knowingly. First rule of business, when you can, use someone else's money.
Right.
What was the main source of his wealth? Asked Decker.
Seemed to be stocks and bonds, mostly. A couple of annuities. It was all liquid.
But does it show where his wealth initially came from?
No, it doesn't. But all the assets were legally in his name.
And he was the only borrower?
Yes, he wasn't married when he did this deal.
And Don Richards did everything by the book?
Asked Lancaster.
Absolutely. All done in accordance with the bank's loan requirements.
What was Katz's background? Education? Birthplace? History?
Tinsdale looked over the screens. Says here on his loan app that he had a BA and an MBA. He listed his occupation as entrepreneur.
But again, no source for his wealth other than the net worth figure.
Well, it was his money. That was verified. He might have inherited it.
I assumed when he died that the loan rolled over to his widow?
No, it didn't.
Why not?
It was a construction loan that was rolled into a 5-year loan with a fixed interest rate, but Katz paid the whole thing off about 6 months after the restaurant opened.
How did he do that? Asked Decker.
Tinsdale studied the screens once more. It's not entirely clear. But it seems like he raised some private money from investors and used that to pay off the loan completely.
And did he take out any more loans with the bank?
There were 2 lines of credit for $1 million each that he took out around the same time. He fully drew down on both and then paid them off, Then he bought an old factory building for about $3 million with an eye to turning it into retail and living space. He took out a loan for that, too. It was finished after he died.
Is the loan still outstanding on that one?
Tinsdale moved through some more screens. No, Katz paid that one off, too.
When?
Let me see. It says here it was paid in full 1 year after he took it out.
But you said the building was finished after he died, said Decker.
That's right. They were only about halfway done when he was killed. Tinsdale shrugged. Apparently he had another round of investment money come in, and they took the loan out.
And did Don Richards work on all these deals?
That's right. He was sort of Katz's go-to person.
Has Rachel Katz applied for any loans from the bank?
No. She doesn't even have a personal account with us. I think she has some deep pockets behind her. Doesn't need a commercial lending source anymore. She seems to be rolling in money right now.
Nice job if you can get it,
said Lancaster dryly.
Outside, Decker looked to the sky.
We were led to believe that the only deal Kate and Richards worked on was for the American Grill. But that wasn't the case. There were the lines of credit and the old factory building.
Okay, but what did we get out of all that except that some people have all the friggin' luck and all the money?
Asked Lancaster.
When somebody keeps paying off big loans unusually early because they got investment money rolling in from shell companies, it tells me one thing.
He looked at his partner. Lancaster nodded.
David Katz was cleaning money.
Exactly. And I wonder if Rachel Katz took over the laundry business when he died.
Chapter 67. Decker and Lancaster were seated across from Bill Payton in his small office at the American Grill. Payton was a big man, about 6'2", 220, with thick shoulders and muscular arms. His gray hair was cut in a bristly flat top, turning silver at the temples. In his early 60s now, he looked like he could bench press a truck.
Thanks for meeting with us,
said Lancaster.
No problem. How's Miss Katz doing?
She hasn't regained consciousness,
said Lancaster.
But the doctors are still hopeful.
Decker slid a photo out of a slip of plastic and handed it across to Payton.
Do you recognize this man?
Payton fingered the photo.
No. Who is he?
The man who attempted to murder your boss. He was killed during the encounter. His name is Eric Tyson, former military.
No, never seen him before. Certainly not here. I can ask around to the staff and see, but the fact is, Miss Katz didn't come in here much.
But she still owns the place,
pointed out Lancaster.
She does, but in the grand scheme of her empire here, we're small potatoes.
He grinned briefly.
And she trusted me to run the place, just like her husband did.
You've been here from the get-go, said Decker.
That's right. David Katz hired me.
I guess you've run restaurants before.
I know my way around the business.
It can be challenging. Lots of restaurants fail.
Yes, they can, and we've had some new competition come in, but we're holding our own.
Were you around when the place was being built? Asked Decker.
I was, yes. David brought me on early enough so I could have input in the process.
How was David Katz to work for?
I always found him professional and focused. Later, I found his wife to be the same.
He looked at his watch.
Anything else?
What will happen to the business if Rachel Katz doesn't recover? Asked Decker.
I have no idea, said Payton. I guess that depends on what's in her will and what her relatives want to do. I hope we don't get to that point.
Absolutely, said Decker. Well, thanks for your time.
He pulled out another photo of Eric Tyson from his pocket and handed it to Payton.
And let us know if anyone remembers seeing that guy around.
Payton took the photo without looking at it.
Will do.
They left and went outside.
Well?
Said Lancaster. Decker took out the plastic slip with the photo inside.
Looks like a beautiful print on the photo,
Go run it and see if Mr. Peyton is who he says he is.
Decker dropped Lancaster and the photo off at the station and continued on to the hospital, where Mars was once more ensconced in Katz's hospital room.
Nothing, said Decker as he sat down next to him.
Mars shook his head.
Got something to tell you.
He filled Mars in on his theory of money laundering.
So you think she was in on it? Asked Mars as he glanced at Katz.
I don't know for sure, but it would be a stretch to conclude that she didn't know about it. She's got financial backers that even the FBI can't pierce.
Mars slowly nodded.
Could be the reason for her guilty conscience and all the weird stuff she was saying to me.
Could be. We met with the guy who manages the American Grill. We got his prints through a bit of sleight of hand, and Mary's running them through the database.
What could that tell you?
I don't think this is just about money laundering, Melvin. I think something else is going on. You don't need to build a basement under a restaurant to run a money laundering business. You just need legitimate businesses to flush bad money through and turn that bad money into other assets and a clean line of cash flow. That's what all of Katz's businesses could allow them to do.
But you don't think that's all? So what else could there be?
Decker shrugged.
I don't know, but I believe that David Katz and Don Richards were killed because something went wrong.
Went wrong? Like what?
Something in the business. Someone felt threatened somehow, by one or both of them. They killed them and pinned it on Merrill Hawkins with his daughter's help.
And her payoff?
She got remade, new life, new everything, from the bottom to the top in a flash.
Like Audrey Hepburn in My Fair Lady, one of my favorite films.
Decker looked at him in a bemused way.
Didn't see you as a My Fair Lady kind of guy.
Hell, I could relate, Decker. I had to remake myself every second of every day when I was growing up in West Texas, and then when I was in prison, and when I got out of prison.
Why not just be yourself?
Easy for you to say.
Decker sat back.
I guess you're right about that.
Yeah, I was the high school and college sports star back then. Whole damn state loved me. I was a hero, but God forbid I eat at their table or date their daughters.
Decker suddenly glanced at Katz.
Jenny Marks said that Katz had been a real mentor to her, showing her the ropes of being in business.
I heard that. So?
So even though Katz said she didn't know her, I wonder if she did the same thing for Mitzi Gardner.
Wait a minute, you think Gardner was Hepburn?
And that means Rachel Katz might have been in the role played by Rex Harrison.
Chapter 68.
I think there's a problem.
Decker stared at Brad Gardner, who was standing pale and shaking in the doorway of his home. Decker had just knocked on the door and Gardner had flung it open.
What sort of problem? Asked Decker.
Mitzi, she's locked herself in our bedroom and she won't come out. And I think she has a gun. She's threatening to shoot herself or anyone who comes through that door.
Have you called the police?
No. I don't know what to do.
Is anyone in the room with her? Your son?
No, he's at school, thank God.
Anybody else?
I had the maid leave when things got weird.
Why are you home at this time of day?
I forgot some papers. I came back for them. That's when Mitzi screamed at me when I tried to open the bedroom door.
Okay, is she on something? Has she been drinking?
Gardner seemed to be on the verge of tears.
I don't know. What the hell is going on?
Show me to the bedroom.
Decker followed him down the hall and they arrived at the door.
Honey, I have Mr. Decker here.
Get him the fuck out of my house,
screamed Mitzi.
Miss Gardner, said Decker.
The next moment they both leapt back because she fired a round right through the wood. The slug missed both men and embedded in the far wall.
Jesus Christ,
cried out Gardner as he dropped to the floor shaking. Decker slid over to him, keeping low.
What kind of gun does she have?
It's a Sig Sauer. I bought it for her, but she picked it out.
What model?
Think. P-238.
What's it look like?
small, she can carry it in her clutch purse. P-238 micro compact, chambered in .380 auto. Yes, that's it, exactly. Standard mag with it, or did she do something special? No, standard.
Decker nodded. Call the police and wait for them by the front door.
What the hell are you two doing out there?
Screamed Mitzi, followed by another shot through the door. With one backward glance at the door, Gardner did as Decker requested, sliding down the hall on his hands and knees. Then he rose and sprinted off. Decker straightened, and keeping well away from the bedroom door, said, Mitzi, it's Amos Decker.
I said to get out of my house, you bastard.
We need to talk.
About what? You've ruined my life? What the hell else is there to talk about, you shit?
How exactly did I do that?
Another round blew through the wood and hit the opposite wall about a foot below the other two bullets.
You know damn well how. You just had to dig all this shit up, didn't you? From all that time ago? You couldn't give a crap how it might affect people. How it might affect me, you asshole!
She shrieked.
Another shot came through the door. Decker flinched with the impact against the wood, but held his ground.
That was not my intent.
Don't you dare bullshit me. It's exactly what you wanted.
She fired another round through the door, ripping a big chunk off it as the wood around the other holes gave way.
Look, if you stop shooting, we can have a conversation.
I'm not talking to you. I'm going to kill myself.
Why would you want to do that?
Because my life is over.
Your husband doesn't think that, or your son.
Don't you dare talk about my son. He's the only good thing I've ever done in my miserable excuse for a life.
I think we have to talk about him if you're planning on leaving him motherless.
Now she started to sob. He could hear the gut-wrenching noises coming through the door. He took a chance and peeped through one of the holes. She was lying in bed, wearing only a long t-shirt. Her uncovered legs were long and pale. The gun was in her right hand.
Mitzi, I can help you if you let me.
Nobody can help me. Not now.
I don't see it that way.
I told you to get out.
He ducked down as the shot came through not the door, but the wall. It must have hit a nail in the stud under the drywall, because it careened into the hall at a weird angle, nearly hitting Decker in the face. He stayed low, breathing heavily and wondering where the hell the cops were.
I can't leave you like this. I'm afraid you're going to hurt yourself.
Fucking A, Sherlock. I'm going to do more than hurt myself, you idiot.
Rachel Katz wouldn't want that, Mitzi. She was the one who helped you turn your life around, and now she's fighting for her life.
Silence. A few moments passed.
What do you know about anything?
I know a lot, Mitzi. I'd like to know more.
You came here and accused me of framing my own father.
So tell me that you didn't. Tell me that you're innocent.
You wouldn't believe me if I did.
Try me.
In a more subdued tone, she said,
Look, it's complicated.
Believe me, I know that. But why do I think that Rachel Katz was blindsided by what happened? And you didn't really know what was going to happen either, Mitzi, did you? I think you were both used. I think you both thought you had no way out.
I don't want to talk about it.
At this point, you're going to have to.
Screw you, Decker.
He flattened himself to the hallway floor right as the bullet blasted through the door. The next instant, he was up and had smashed into the door, breaking it open. An astonished Mitzi gaped at him as he charged toward the bed. She aimed her pistol at him and fired. Click, click. Decker wrenched the gun out of her hand and pocketed it. He looked down at her.
P-238 micro compact has a 7-round standard mag.
He looked at the bullet-pocked door and wall, and you just fired your last bullet. He turned back at her as she covered herself with a sheet.
Get out!
She screamed. I can't do that. The police are on their way. She looked confused.
Why?
Well, for starters, you tried to kill me and your husband.
No, I didn't. I was just trying to make you leave me alone.
Not sure the court will see it that way. You fire a gun at someone. Deadly intent is pretty much implied.
Her lips trembled.
Do you mean I could go to jail? But I'm innocent.
Like your father? He was innocent. And he still went to jail. Then someone put a bullet in his head. They didn't even let him die peacefully.
Decker sat on the edge of the bed and gazed at her.
This is the moment, Mitzi. The crossroads. Now is the time where you can make the right decision instead of the selfish one. You can correct a lot of wrongs. Will you do it? Do you have the courage to do that?
What if I don't?
She said, drawing her legs up and gathering the covers around her.
Then you go to jail. It's as simple as that.
I'm going to jail regardless.
Not necessarily. Or you could hang out here until someone tries to kill you, like they did with Rachel Katz.
He glanced at her nightstand and started when he eyed the half-empty prescription pill bottle.
How many pills did you take? He snapped.
Not that many,
she said hesitantly.
How many is that?
4 or 5.
He snatched up the bottle and read the label.
Christ, Mitzi.
He called 911 and requested an ambulance, pronto, for a possible drug overdose. She lay back against the headboard and looked around the room. She smiled.
I have a perfect life. Did you know that?
Tell me about it.
Can't you see for yourself? Perfect home, perfect husband, perfect child.
She uncovered her bare legs.
Perfect body.
She tapped her teeth.
First-rate veneers to hide the shitty, ugly gray.
She covered herself back up as her smile faded.
But the shitty, ugly gray is right below the surface. Right underneath. They couldn't take that away. It'll always be with me.
But you made the change. That was a lot of work. You had to be determined. It wasn't easy kicking what you kicked.
It was either do that or end up dead.
She looked at him defiantly.
I chose to live.
I'm glad you did. Now you have a family. A son who's counting on you. So choose to live this time, too.
Her lips trembled when he said this. She rubbed at her eyes.
But now it's all effed up. I don't know what to do.
As Decker listened to this, he saw her eyes becoming droopy, her features more and more listless. He let a few seconds pass, and trying to keep his voice calm, asked,
Do you have any Narcan here?
She smiled and shook her head.
As for druggies, I'm not a druggie. I'm not anymore. I am the princess of the manor. The lady is perfect. Everybody says so.
Are you sure it was just 4 or 5 pills?
He said quickly. She stretched out like a cat.
Maybe it was more. I don't remember.
She lay back and closed her eyes.
Stay with me, Mitzi. Come on now.
He sat down next to her and slapped her face. It was a poor substitute for Narcan, but he had to do something.
Hey,
she said angrily, swatting at him.
You assaulted me.
You framed your father. Why?
She didn't answer.
Why? He said, shaking her. Come on, talk to me.
I did it for drugs.
For drugs? You mean for you?
She waved this comment off.
No, stupid. For mom. Morphine. For a drip line. Pure stuff. Right from the hospital. Gave it to her till she died. And she died peacefully. All I could do for her
But it was something, right?
Right. Who got it for you?
They did.
Who's they?
She waved her hand around the room.
You know, them.
She yawned and closed her eyes. He slapped her again. This time she didn't complain or open her eyes.
Shit.
He could hear the sirens now. Decker gripped Mitzi's shoulders to keep her upright as she started to slump sideways.
What did they promise you, Mitzi? A new life? A new everything? Did Rachel Katz help you out? Did she become your mentor?
Mitzi mumbled.
She's a nice person. Helped me.
I bet she did. So they killed her husband and Don Richards, and the others, and set up your dad.
Set him up.
And how did they approach you?
Carl.
Carl Stevens, right. He was the go-between. Who was he working with?
He's dead, you told me. Dead.
The sirens were growing closer.
That's right, he's dead, but you're not. You can tell me all about it.
She shook her head.
It's too late for that.
It's never too late for the truth.
She started to fall sideways. He slapped her again, to no effect. The sirens had been growing louder and louder all this time. Then the sound died. They were in the driveway.
Carl Stevens is dead, that's right. But who was he working with? Did it have something to do with the American Grill? Bill Payton?